Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Follow the Money right after this. Well, Joe Smith starts the day early, having set his alarm clock made in Japan for 6 a.m. While his coffee pot made in Japan is perking, he puts on his, he takes his blow dryer, which is made in Taiwan, and then he shaves with his electric razor made in Hong Kong. He puts on a dress shirt made in Taiwan. His designer jeans are made in Singapore and a pair of tennis shoes made in Korea. Then after cooking up some breakfast in his new electric skillet made in the Philippines, he sits down to figure out on his calculator made in Mexico how much he can spend today. Then after setting his watch made in Switzerland to the radio made in Hong Kong, he goes out and gets in his car made in Germany and goes looking, as he has for many months, for a good paying American job. Then after the end of another discouraging and fruitless day, and Joe decides to relax for a while, he puts on a pair of sandals made in Brazil, pours himself a glass of wine made in France, turns on his TV made in Japan, and ponders again why it is he can't find a good paying American job. Now, instead of a good paying American job, why doesn't Joe look for a good paying American private business dealing in property instead of income? Now, if you'd like to tap into the power of private business, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's free of charge, and call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Well, I'm getting more and more calls. Every day someone is calling and asking me, what should they do for the coming economic collapse? It's almost like rats leaving a sinking ship. Somehow or another, people can sense that the jig this time is up. Now, I don't know if the jig is up or not. I'm not a prophet. Back in 1979, I thought the jig was up, and Paul Volcker, who was the chairman of the Federal Reserve at that time, pulled the fat out of the fire. They raised interest rates to about 20%, and then they defended the dollar with a passion. And remember, we voted Jimmy Carter out in 1980, and then Ronald Reagan came in for 79, 80, 81, 82. You know, we had a pretty severe recession. In fact, it was a stagflation period that began on August the 15th, 1971, with the closing of the gold window by President Nixon, combined with the war in Vietnam. And then the stagflation that set in, inflation, and a negative growth in the economy for about 5 or 6 years. It was a poor period of time. I got by it fairly middle and well, but you know, there was trouble a brewing. And so finally the people got tired of Jimmy Carter, and they voted in Ronald Reagan, and they started spending money like it was going out of style, and then budget deficits skyrocketed. And that's when we topped $1 trillion. Remember, the national debt hit $1 trillion in the Reagan years. Well, today it's $10 trillion, or you know, it's bumping up against it. We're headed to $10 trillion. Now, it took, you know, nearly 200 plus years to build up that first $1 trillion worth of debt. But now, in just, 15 years, we've gone 10 times that. So what's happening here is the geometric effect. It's 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64. That's the way the Ponzi scheme works. And that's why I'm of the opinion that the whole thing's coming unraveled this time. I don't think there's a Paul Volcker who's going to step in and pull the chestnuts out of the fire this time, which means that the whole thing's going upside down. Now, on the other side of it, there's life. You know, there's life after the Depression, just like there was life after the Great Depression of the 1930s. But there's tough times coming, and people want to avoid that. Now, you should have avoided that, you know, 10 years ago. You should have started on your plan 10 years ago, but you didn't know about it, and you didn't do it. 5 years ago would have been a great help. You should have sold your house or any real estate that you have. There's a guy over at Hawaii, been calling here at the law school regularly. He should have sold his real estate back in June of 2005. I was recommending get out of real estate as early as 2000. Get out. Now, better to be out early than to be out a day late, because you know, today you can't sell real estate. I mean, you got to find a real sucker out there to take on your real estate liabilities now. So I think for practical purposes, the real estate option is over. The easy money, you know, when we could just sell the stock, sell the bond, sell the real estate, come up with the money, buy gold, and live happily ever after, gone. Past tense, gone. The problems that you people today face, as opposed to what we were facing in preparing for the economic meltdown 5, 10, 20 years ago, is something entirely different. But that doesn't mean that you're dead in the water. It just means that at this juncture of time, the options aren't as plentiful, and you're going to have to work a lot harder. Now, let me tell you a little story here about the angel. There's in the Bible, there's quite a bit of talk about angels. And I told you about a guy called up over here. In fact, his name was John. He told me he's just going to come over and take it away from me. He was pretty blunt about it. He says, I'm not going to do jack diddly squat. And if all these things that you're talking about, Gordon, actually happens, I'll just come over, kill you, and take what you got, and that'll be the end of it. He was pretty upfront. Now, old John died here a few years ago. He didn't live long enough to come over and take it away from me. But I want to tell you something about this coming over and taking it away, because you know Noah worked for 120 years to build an ark. And when it started to rain, the people that were outside the ark needed to get into the ark in the worst way. And there were a whole lot more of those people outside the ark than there were inside the ark. And you would have thought that, you know, when it started raining and when the door was shut, that those people would have broken into the ark, thrown Noah out of the ark and taken over, or at least a bunch of them, or some kings or noblemen or the military or the army or the navy or somebody. But they didn't. For some reason, the masses of people outside the ark could not dispossess the people who were in possession of the ark. You ever wonder why? Now, I don't doubt the great power of the United States military. But I don't think that the United States Army, Navy, or Marines can deal with this God, the God of Abraham. I don't believe it. There was a great pharaoh, it's reported that it's Ramses II, that took on this God at the Red Sea, and God killed his entire army, 450,000 people, according to Josephus. Killed him in 20 minutes in one afternoon. And there was another activity at Sodom and Gomorrah, and this God, he's called the great God in Scripture, he said, I'm going to overthrow those two cities over there, I've had it with them. And he overthrew them, and you'd think, you know, that these people, with their great armies, and with their great wealth, and their great intellects, and great knowledge, would be able to do something, but, you know, there's a couple, three examples that they were unable to do something. I'll tell you something more about this angel over here. This angel's name is Michael, and I call him Big Mike for short. Big Mike. And this guy, Big Mike, is the guy that kept the sword at the Garden of Eden to keep anybody from getting back in it for 1,656 years. That was his job. Keep these people out of the garden. And he did. He did. And then the great flood came, washed it all away. Well, in Daniel 3, verse 28, there's a little story here about an angel. There's a guy by the name of three guys named Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These three guys, they practiced the law of God. They were actually three iconoclasts. They weren't practicing Catholics, Protestants, or Jews. These guys were something else. And so Nebuchadnezzar, who was the great king of the time, he said, we're going to have a ceremony. And it's kind of like starting a baseball game. Everybody stands up, crosses their heart, and sings the Star-Spangled Banner. And these three guys, when the music played and the Star-Spangled Banner was on, they wouldn't sing, wouldn't cross their hearts, wouldn't salute. And the king was distraught, and he said, hey, you three, show a little respect. And they said, no, I don't think we're going to do that. And so the king, he said, well, now listen, we're going to do this drill over again. And they did the drill over again. He says, now, if you guys, you know, shape up, show a little respect here, you know, we can forgive and forget. But if you don't, you know, we're going to kill you. And so they said, no, we're going to decline. And so the king, he was a little ticked off now, so they had a unique method for killing people. They were going to burn them to death. Not one of the better ways to go. So they had this fiery furnace. I don't know what this is like, but it's, you know, it's some kind of a big tank, and they've got fire in it. And I suppose they're dumping a little fuel oil, and it's kind of like an oil stove. And he said, listen, we're going to throw you into that fiery furnace unless you show a little respect and take off your hats, cross your hearts, and sing the Star-Spangled Banner. And they said, no, we're not going to do that. And so he said, well, I'm going to heat it up seven times hotter. So they opened up the spigot. I mean, they had that thing so hot, it was cherry red. And they picked these three guys up, and they threw them into the fiery furnace. You'll read about this. It's in Daniel chapter 3. Daniel chapter 3. Anyway, these three guys are thrown in the fiery furnace, and you know they should have been burned up, you know, in about 30, 60, or 90 seconds. And so anyway, the king, he's looking in among the flames there, and he sees four guys in there. And he says to his immediate entourage, he said, didn't we throw three guys in? And they said, yea, Lord, we threw in three guys. He said, now count the guys that are in the fiery furnace there. How many do you see? And they counted one, two, three, four. They counted four guys in there. And so the king said, well, who is that fourth guy? And they all said, we don't know. We don't know who he is. We don't know where he came from. We don't know how he got in there. So the king says, hey, you guys, come out. Come forth. Now, I think these three guys missed their lines. Because if I would have been in there, and the king said, hey, Gordon, come out here. And I'd have said, why don't you come in and get me? And that's the kind of jerk I am. I'd say, come in and get me. Well, anyway, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they came out. The fourth guy, we don't know what happened to him. He just kind of disappeared. Now, what this fourth guy was, I'll tell you who he was. That was Michael the archangel, and he's an angel, and these guys are not affected by fire. They're not affected by physics. They're called spirit beings. Sometimes people say, Mr. Gordon, can you tell me what a spirit being is? And the answer is, nope. No, sir, I don't know. I've got a clue. See, I just got here in 1939, and I was educated in public school and institutionalized for 12 years. All I know is what I read in the papers, and I ain't seen a word about spirit beings in the papers, and I don't know anything about them. Well, other than what I read in the Bible. And so the king was amazed because these three guys had been in there, you know, for 5-10 minutes, and they didn't have the smell of fire on them. Not a single hair on their head was singed. Their clothes weren't burned. And yet they'd been in this hot fire that was so hot that the men that threw them in had been killed by the heat of the fire. And now that's the power of an angel. Now in Matthew 4, verse 6, there's another story about an angel over here. Satan is talking to God himself, talking to Jesus. And he says, hey, why don't you throw yourself down off this temple? Because your angels have charge over you, and they'll bear you up lest you dash your foot against a stone. And the Messiah said, yeah, that's true. That's true. But there's a scripture that says you ought not to be tempting God. You ought not to be driving your car around 35-mile-an-hour turns at 60 miles an hour. Even if you are driving a 280Z, you ought not to be tempting God like that. And so he didn't throw himself down off the temple, but he did say this. He said, if I slipped and fell, the angel would save me alive. And I remember a story, in fact, two or three of them from airplanes. There was this Lockheed Electra broke up over the Amazon. A little girl, I think she's about 11 years old, I recall. I read about this in Reader's Digest. She falls 18,000 feet. She hits the tower. She's in her seat. See, the airplane breaks apart. She's in her seat, falls 18,000 feet, hits the top of a tree, falls down through the tree, breaks her fall. She hits the ground, unbuckles her seat belt, and she's not even hurt. Boys and girls, that doesn't happen in the real world. Now, I don't know who her angel was, but she had a guardian angel, and all of us have a guardian angel. The Bible reveals that everybody walking around has an angel following you around, protecting you. And so when somebody gets killed, then his angel didn't protect him that time. But, you know, I had three times when I should have got killed and I didn't. And I think most of us, you know, if you're a man, you're walking around, you know, there was a time, you know, you were out working in the woods and that tree came down about 2 feet behind you. Oh, my God, almost, it should have killed me, but it didn't. And so there's a third story over here in Exodus 23, and I'm going to read this one to you because a lot of times people like this guy John say they're just going to come in here and take it away from me, and I thought I'd share this with you because I don't think that you're going to do that. And there's a very important reason why. If you practice the law of God, I mean, if you're one of the people, not very many of us out here, but there are a few people that do work hard and try to practice this whole law. And when I tell people that, they get real indignant because most of them are Christians, and they say, do you mean to tell me that you practice the whole law of God? And I tell them, yeah, I do. And they say, well, that's impossible. You can't do that. Excuse me, boys and girls, I don't know why not. I always ask people, well, do you have a driver's license? And they say, well, yes, I do. Have you practiced the whole traffic law of your state? And they say, well, yes, I do. I don't say to those people, aha, you lion sack, you know what? You can't practice the whole traffic law of your state. There's more than 2,000 statutes, and you don't even know all those statutes. Now, most of you people practice your traffic law, traffic statutes of your state. There's three times more traffic laws in your state than there is laws in the whole law of God in the Bible. Did you know that? Three times more traffic statutes in your state than there is laws in the Bible. So when somebody says to me, you can't practice the law of the Bible, I always ask them, well, how in the hell do you practice the traffic laws of your state? And there's three times as many. Furthermore, here in the United States, we have 2.5 million laws. Well, let's get off this thousand crap. There's 2.5 million laws, and they're adding to them at the rate of 47 pages a day. I don't see why it's so damn hard to practice thou shalt not steal or thou shalt not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag or whatever. You know, it's a matter of learning these laws and then putting them into practice. So now if you ask me the question, do you practice all 759 of them perfectly every day of your life forever? The answer is no. Do you practice all of the traffic statutes of your state every day of your life perfectly without fail? No. Hell, that's why you have traffic court, isn't it? But that wasn't the question. People ask me, do you practice the Mosaic Law? And I tell them yes, and they get real nasty. They get real indignant because they don't practice it. Now, you need to practice this law because if you want the benefits that come from the angel in the fiery furnace or the angel in the lion's den or the angel that comes and knocks on your door in downtown Sodom and says, hey, Bob, it's time to get the hell out while the getting is good, well, then you have to be doing something and doing something right. And unfortunately, most Americans and Canadians aren't doing that. So people, you know, get real nervous like rats on a ship, you know, and the rats know when the ship is going to sink, and so they get off of it. Well, now we're starting to see the rats here in America calling me on the telephone saying, hey, Gordon, looks like the ship's going to sink. And I say, yep, it's got a great big hole right outside. When did that happen? August 2007, ripped a great big hole right in the side of the great ship America. Has it sunk yet? Nope, still float. Is it taking on water? You bet it is. How long is it going to float? I don't know. Is it going to sink? Without a doubt. Are you going to be on it? Hell no. I got off this ship a long time ago. Are there a lot of people on the great ship America going down with it? You bet. Are there going to be survivors? Yes. Am I going to be one of the survivors? I don't have a clue. Now, if you want to be one of the survivors off the great ship America and the Great Depression of the 21st century, you're going to have to get your act cleaned up, kids. Bottom line, it isn't true because I said so. I'm just a reporter. I'm just here to report. Now, here's the report I want to give you about this angel. It's in Exodus 23, and it starts in verse 20. Exodus 23, verse 20, and it ends in Exodus 23, 33. So about 13 verses here. 13 verses. Tells you quite a story about this guy named Big Mike. Now, I'm not talking about the supernatural salvation of America or give your heart to Jesus now, and he's going to make everything just real good for you. Here's a very practical, everyday, garden variety solution to your dilemma. This is the place to start. It's Exodus 23, 20. Listen to this. It says, "Behold, I send an angel before you to keep you in the way and to bring you into the place that I've prepared. Now beware of this angel and obey his voice and provoke him not, for he will not pardon your transgressions, because my name is in him. But if you shall indeed obey his voice and do all that I speak, then I will be an enemy unto your enemies and an adversary unto your adversaries. For my angel shall go before you and bring you in unto the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, and I'll cut them off. You shall not bow down to their gods, nor serve them, nor do after their works, but you shall totally overthrow them and quite break down their images. And you shall serve the Eternal your God, and he will bless your bread and your water. And I will take sickness away from the midst of you. And there shall nothing cast their young nor be barren in your land. The number of your days I will fulfill. I will send my fear before you, and will destroy all the people to whom you shall come, and I will make all of your enemies turn their backs unto you. And I will send hornets before you, which shall drive out the Hivites, the Canaanites, the Hivites, the Hittites, from before you. But I will not drive them out from before you in 1 year, lest the land become desolate, and the beast of the field multiply against you. By little and little I will drive them out from before you, until you be increased and inherit the land. And I'll set my bounds from the Red Sea even to the Sea of the Philistines, and from the desert even unto the river. For I will deliver the inhabitants of the land into your hand, and you shall drive them out from before you. You shall make no covenants with them, nor with their gods, and you shall not dwell in their land, or they shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it'll surely be a snare unto you." Now there's the story. Now I think that if you want to save yourself out of this great tribulation, out of this great depression, this runaway inflation at this late date, you need to make a meaningful change. So in the last program I said you need to get off your ass and go to work. And I'm using this doctor. I've never met this doctor, but this doctor called my wife the other day, and he said, "Hey, listen, I need you to tell me where I can land my airplane within walking distance of the farm, as if I'm going to take care of this guy. You mean to tell me you're just going to fly in here, doc, and then I'm going to feed you, clothe you, and house you for the rest of your life? Is this retirement 101? Is this the Gordon retirement program? Is that what you got in mind? Maybe I misunderstood your drift here, but it looks like to me, doc, you need to take care of yourself. And if you could take care of yourself, you'd be doing a big job for yourself and your wife and your kids and your family. And let me do the same thing for my wife and my kids and my family. You take care of you, I'll take care of me." Now, I told you in the last program the logistics of the food problem over here. And I told you about the guy that said, "I'm just going to come take it away from you." And I'm here to tell you that as long as I practice this law, you ain't coming here to take it away from me. It ain't going to happen. Now, I'm going to tell you one more little story over here to kind of emphasize my point. In 1 Kings chapter 17 and 18. There's a story here about Elijah. I didn't set it out here before the program, just popped into my mind. But this guy, Elijah, is a prophet of God, and he practices the law. In fact, in 1 Kings 18, he says, "I'm the last guy in Israel to be practicing this law. Look how they persecute me." And Big Mike came up to him, and he says, "Oh, no. You're not the only guy in Israel that practices the law." He said, "I've reserved," this is Big Mike speaking again, he says, "I've reserved 7,000 that have not bowed their knee to Baal." 7,000. I would say here in America, boys and girls, that there's easy 7,000 people that have not bowed their knee to Baal. I don't know who they are. I run across them every once in a while. You'll find a guy here and a guy there that practices the law of God. He actually practices the Sabbaths and the holy days. I mean, this is a guy that looks at the scripture, takes it seriously, and says, "Hey, listen, I think God meant what he said what he meant, and I think maybe I ought to do that. Sit down, shut up, fold your hands, do what you're told, as my old daddy told me." And so, as a result of that, they have a protection, just like Noah had a protection. God himself protected him in the ark. Hell, there were millions of people in the world. You can rest assured that the army, the navy, and the marines were watching this subversive terrorist called Noah building this ark, telling people that they were nuts for not building an ark like he was doing. They looked at him and they said, "No, we're not nuts. You're nuts for building an ark. The sun's shining." Boys and girls, as long as there's food in the Walmart store, you don't have a need to stockpile. It's when the shelves are empty that you have the need, but by the time the shelves are empty, there isn't going to be any way to fulfill the need. That's why you have to prepare in the summer and the fall for the winter, because by the time winter arrives, there isn't anything there to prepare with. It's all gone. It's wiped away. So I explained that to you. I said, "Hey, listen, there's a time, and you're running out. There's a time, and it's still here. But now you got to hustle. The time when you could have sat back, relaxed, taken in the slack, and prepared is gone. Now you got to hustle. So I told you, I said, I teach two schools on how to do this. It's not how to retire. You know, like Hillary and Barack are telling you, know, vote for me, and you're on easy street. You know, we'll solve all your problems for you. You're gonna have to get out of bed early, go to bed late, and you're gonna have to work hard in order to get enough together to see yourselves through. Two schools. One is how to make $100,000 on 25 acres or less using the Mosaic Law. I know Professor Whatley, great guy. You can get his program on the internet, but he's not gonna tell you how to use the angel, and I am. If you want to follow Whatley, get after it. If you want to follow the angel, that's the guy I'm recommending. And I can't think of a better business to be in than food and the famine. For most of you, you couldn't grow an ear of corn. You need to learn how to do that, and then you need to learn how to do that for yourselves. And I'm not talking about the latest GMOs or artificial chemicals and fertilizers. I mean, we got to go back and learn how to practice land Sabbaths, jubilees, 15 agricultural laws of the Bible. If you want to succeed in agriculture, you're going to have to practice the 15 agricultural laws that God put in motion. If you don't want to do that, you don't want this program. You want to stay as far away from me as you can get. Second is subsistence and survival. How do I prepare to live through this coming economic disaster? And that's what all the newsletter writers are calling it, a disaster. A disaster of unparalleled proportions. The numbers that are coming in, we've never seen numbers like these before. We're talking trillions of dollars. We're talking about numbers that we can't even count on both hands, both feet. I mean, if you take your shoes off, you're not going to be able to count. The numbers are so big. All right. Now, these two schools, you know, I do these two schools twice a year. And there's a pair of them coming up here this spring. If you want to call the law school and ask, we'll tell you how to get it. And they're limited. They're limited to 10 people. So, if you know, you get out here and you're number 52, unfortunately for you, there isn't space in the upcoming school. And I'm telling you, you haven't got forever. You need to get your hiney in gear and get going. So that's why we teach a correspondence school. We put this on compact disc. We put this in paper. We put it in binders. And we say, okay, now, kids, listen up. Pay attention. Let me show you how to do this. Now, I told you about the three angels over here. I got to give you the mid-course reminder. Then when we come back, we're going to take a look here at some more of this thing called subsistence and survival. And this undue reliance that we have on government and stocks and bonds and FEMA. And they're going to come and save us. And I think if you're waiting for your government to come and save you, then you're going to die hard. All right, let me give you this reminder. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Don't just come knock on the door after you flew in. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. Now, remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. That's the place to start. The phone number, again, is 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate, and that's because most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed or recommended here by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. Again, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. It's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right. Now, with a little biblical understanding behind this, or warning, however you want to put it, let's take a look here at the government. Hank Paulson, the Secretary of the Treasury, was on TV. He was on the Lear NewsHour last night. And he said, if your house is about to be foreclosed on, what you need to do is to call this toll-free number. It's 888-995-HOPE. And get a 30-day extension or a little breather room on your home so we can help you save your home. If you want to stay in your home, we want to help you, if you can afford it. Well, boys and girls, most of you people that are buried in debt can't afford those homes, and you need a plan. Honest to God, I don't deny it. The Secretary of the Treasury is not lying to you. You need a plan. His plan is for you to spend every dollar that you can get your hands on and give it to the mortgage lender and practice more of the unjust weights and balances. Practice more of the usury and interest. Practice more of what you've already done to bury yourselves in debt. Now, I come along on the scene and I say, excuse me, folks, if you're unable to make your mortgage payments now, isn't that a pretty clear signal that you're in debt up over your eyebrows? And that what you really need to do is to get out of debt? I know that's a wild new concept. Get out of debt. Americans have been living in debt all of their lives. It's the only thing they know. So when the secretary comes to you and says, hey, we got a plan. I mentioned to you in the last program. I said, yeah, that's right. There's a plan coming. It's called the mark of the beast. To save your home, to save your car, to save your job, you go down and get this little thingy in your hand. Now, your God told you, don't do that. Your creator told you, don't get into debt. Your creator told you, don't practice usury and interest. Your creator has warned you about unjust weights and balances, Federal Reserve notes, stocks and bonds. You didn't listen. You buried yourselves in debt. Now the Ponzi scheme is about to unravel. It is in the process of unraveling. You're calling me on the telephone saying, oh my God, Mr. Gordon, what am I going to do? Well, let me offer a wild new idea to you. Has it ever occurred to any of you people out there that maybe, just maybe, what we've been listening to over the past 75 years, borrow money, pay interest, use unjust weights and balances, use paper money, use clad coins, has been the wrong advice? Could it be that maybe that was a mistake? And that the dilemma that you find yourself in today is the results of what you have done in the past? I always like to remind myself, have you ever seen somebody that's overweight? You know, they're fat. Do you know that all that fat on their body got on their body through their mouth? Every single pound went right through their lips. And you know, that's what we call being the proximate cause of your own injury. Well, all that debt, boys and girls, that you've got, you went down there and signed some piece of paper. You went down and promised to pay these guys that usury and interest. I mean, you put yourself into that debt. And now you can't service the debt. And then on top of that, you don't have a four-year food supply. You don't have a house that's bought free and clear. You don't have a four-year supply of clothes. You're living from hand to mouth. You're living from paycheck to paycheck. You can see that that's not good. I'm unable to meet the interest payments. Here comes the Secretary of the Treasury. He says, what you need is more debt. What you need is more time. Just keep doing everything that you've done in the past to create all of this horrendous mess that you're in, and it'll get better somehow in the future. That's what they're telling you. All right, now let me come on the scene over here and say, I think that's a crock of BS. What got you into trouble, boys and girls, was your debt. What got you into trouble was the mortgage. What got you into trouble was the paper money, the stocks, the bonds, and all of the crap that FDR and the politicians and the big businesses have been selling you over the last 75 years. That's what got you into trouble. It wasn't listening to your God, I'll tell you that. You know, you people don't have a surplus. You don't have a problem with, well, we listened to God, and he got us into all this trouble. So now I need to vote for Hillary or Barack to save me from God. I don't think that's your problem. And I don't think Hillary and Barack are your solution either. So here at the law school, we take a little different tack. You know, we look at this problem, we say, well, let's see, now we're in debt above our eyeballs. And we signed these mortgage contracts, and we're paying usury and interest. Now, let me tell you a story. Most people at some point in their life buy a stock or two. In 1960, if you bought stocks, and this is what they tell you, this is what Henry Paulson from Goldman Sachs, the Secretary of the Treasury, would tell you, buy stocks. Buy into the stock market for the long haul so that you can retire with a Winnebago and travel around and enjoy your golden years. That's what they've been selling it. There isn't anybody that's made any money off of stocks. Bottom line. I guess maybe that's a little bit too all-encompassing there. There are some people that do make money off of stocks. It's the guys that are selling them. The guys that are the stockbrokers and the companies that are selling the stocks, they're getting paid for it, and they're making money off of it. But you and me, the Joe Sixpacks out here, we never made any money off of stocks. The history of stocks from 1960 to 2000 was, if you bought $10,000 worth of stocks in 1960 and sold them in the year 2000, you paid $10,000 for them in 1960, you sold them for $73,000 in 2000. You made seven times what you paid for. But in purchasing power, you lost $3,800. You lost more than one-third of your purchasing power. because you needed to have made about 10 times more, but you only made 7 times. That's just a break even, based upon what you could have bought back in 1960. See, in 1960, you could have bought four 1960 Chevrolet automobiles. And your $70,000, you know, in 2000 wouldn't buy you 4 Chevrolet automobiles. Buy you about 2. Maybe 3 at best. So you lost money, is what you did. And you lost money. And I've reported on that, you know, a time or two. The bonds right now, you know, people are fleeing today. I read this in my newsletters. They are fleeing to the safety of the bond market. Excuse me, folks. The bond market is paying you about 3 or 4% interest. I mean, if you people have got bonds that are paying you 5, 6, 7%, I mean, you're just out in the stratosphere. But the inflation is running 10 to 15%. 10%, 11% in 2007, 9% in 2006, and it's projected at 15% for this year. Forget the crap that the government's telling you, because that 4% that the government's feeding you is a lie. It's not true. And hell, anybody that's got a brain that ain't dead yet can walk into any damn store in America and tell you that 4.6% inflation is a fairy tale. Hell, y'all know that's double that or more. Now wake up and smell the coffee. The first thing you got to do, folks, is to get out of debt. And I'm not telling you to go pay off the debt. You're buried so deep you can't pay it. Now that's why we have these land sabbaths and jubilees. That's why we have the debt forgiveness, the forgiveness of debt every 7 years. There's a relief program set out by God himself. I had a young couple here come here to the farm not too long ago, and they're buried in debt. And the guy said, well, I want to get out of debt, and I want to do what you want. And so I said, well, first thing we got to do is get you out of debt. And probably the best way to do that is to renege on the debts that you have. Oh, God, I can't do that. Wouldn't be morally right. Somehow or another, in people's minds, it seems to be morally right to pay interest and usury, which we are commanded not to do. But to abandon the debt after we have violated the law of God and contracted for it seems to be, oh, we couldn't do that. Yeah, we can obey the Secretary of the Treasury, but we can't obey God and keep his commandments. Well, okay, if that's what you want to do, get after it. Go out there and keep making your payments. But if you keep making your payments, then you're not going to have anything left over with which to buy or with which to store up what you're going to need for the next 4 years. And you need a minimum 4 years supply. Hell, the Great Tribulation itself is 1,260 days long. That's 3.5 years. I mean, just all by itself. 3.5 years, 1,260 days. Don't you think you ought to have a little bit going in, maybe a little bit going out? Don't you think during this four-year period, maybe you ought to be producing a little bit, you know, to tide you over in case it's a little bit longer than that? Have you thought about maybe winter might be a little bit longer, or maybe it might be a little colder, maybe it might be a little worse than it's been in the past? I know it's just a wild new idea that maybe we ought to prepare for that. Maybe we ought to work a little harder. I had a guy here not too many years ago. It's been, you know, 10 years ago or so, but he, back around 2000, you remember that when the stock market collapsed? And the government came out and said, what you people need to do is to invest for the long haul. So this guy's wife went out, took all her savings out of the bank and went and invested in stocks. This is back in 2001, 2003, long ago. You know, if there was ever a time to stay out of unjust weights and balances, it was after the collapse in 2000. But, you know, people have been buying stocks. They call here and they say, well, I'm invested in the stock market. It's been going down and I'm losing all this money. And should I stay in the stock market and lose more, or what should I do? And, you know, people, they panic switch. They call here. Boys and girls, I'm not a stock analyst. Hell, I'm not a prophet. I can't tell you where the stock market's going. But I can tell you this. The stock market is a criminal activity. The bond market is a criminal activity. Real estate mortgages and paying usury and interest on consumer debt is a criminal activity prohibited by God. And it is prohibited in the scripture. You ought not to be doing that. And you went out and did it. And so there's a penalty that comes down on you for doing it. And God doesn't have to come down here, slap you up alongside the head. You know, you're paying the penalty right now. You're unable to pay your debts. You can't service your debt. And so now your creditors are going to come take your house away from you. Your creditors are going to take your car away from you. They're going to take your big screen TV. They're going to outsource your job to China. I made that report to you. First program coming out of the chute. I said, let me explain to you, Bretton Woods. This is not an accident. The jobs in America and Canada, they're not being exported to India and China accidentally for no good reason. Hell, this was planned and orchestrated clear back in 1944. 1944. Long, long before most of you people were even born. Now, this isn't an accident. It's being orchestrated. And we're going to produce order out of chaos. These people have a new world order. They have a vision. And they're carrying it out. It just happens that it runs counter to, it runs opposite to the laws of God. And so I'm not surprised that Henry Paulson comes over the Lair News Hour and says, boys and girls, call 1-888-995-HOPE and get that 30-day extension so we can keep you buried in this morass of debt for the rest of your life. My God, whatever you do, don't get out of debt. It might ruin your credit rating. Hell, you ain't getting credit today. And if you had AAA credit rating, you couldn't go to the bank and borrow any money. They ain't lending. So what the hell do you need credit for? If you can't borrow, what do you need credit for? Troops. What you need is wealth. And wealth comes from property. And property comes from labor. And you need to get out and go to work. And you need to start practicing the law of God. And if you'll practice these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, like God told us to do in the beginning, most of your economic problems will melt away. Your agricultural, your farming problems will melt away. And if need be, you know, Big Mike will come over here and protect you, if that's what it takes. So I'm going to work real hard. I'm going to obey God, keep his commandments, and do what he tells me. Sit down, shut my mouth, and fold my hands. And I think things are going to work out a lot better for me. Meanwhile, back on the farm, I get up every morning, and I keep working like that ant. And I keep preparing. Because the winter's coming, and there isn't going to be any more preparation. Jesus made that observation. He said the night comes when, you know, no work will be done. There's a time coming when the door's going to be shut. Tain't yet, but it's coming. And most of you can start seeing that. And that's why I'm getting so many telephone calls, and that's why so many of you are getting real nervous and calling, oh, what am I going to do? As if, you know, by following me. Now, boys and girls, you do not need to follow George Gordon. I'm not seeking a following. You don't have to give your heart to Jesus. You don't have, in fact, Jesus already told you, he said, the day will come when you will cry out to me. This is in 1 Samuel chapter 8, about verse 19. He says, the day will come when you'll cry out to me because of this king that you've set over you, Hillary, Barack, George, but I will not hear you. So if you think you're going to pray to Jesus and he's going to bail your chestnuts out of the fire, I think you ought to guess again, because he already told you, I ain't listening to this crap. I've heard enough of it. Time for you to start performing. Time for you to get out there and mow the grass, make your bed, wash the dishes, and shut up. Listen up. Pay attention. Then maybe there's something we can do for you. Now, meanwhile, back on the farm, let me tell you about these two schools. And I've been working on this for a lot of years. I'm an old man, and I've been waiting for this for about 30 years. Now, I'm prepared for myself, but I'm not prepared for you and 55,000 other people. So if you're waiting for me, hell, FEMA can't even help you. Now, if FEMA can't help you, what in the hell do you think an old man's going to do for you? So forget about me. Concentrate on yourself. There's a whole lot that you can do if you knew what to do, step by step. So in my subsistence and survival school, one of the first things we got to get a handle on is this thing called debt. Secondly, we need to get a handle on your assets. What is it that you actually have that we can use? Because, you know, you've got a lot of assets, and we need to save all of the assets that you've got. I mean, if you've got it, we need to save it. You need to save it. And you save everything that you can. We don't throw anything away. We don't waste anything. We don't lose anything. What you cannot save, get rid of. It's kind of like an airplane with four engines. It's loaded to the gunnels, and we're wallowing around in bad air, and all of a sudden one engine quits, and we start to lose a little altitude. We have to throw some stuff overboard, kids. So we're going to throw overboard that which we cannot save. It's got to go. And one of the first things that has to go is debt. Debt is a luxury. The prophet cannot tolerate. So we start paring down. I had to do this more than once in my life. You take a look at your financial statement, you take a look at your income, you take a look at your outgo, and you say, hey, I've got too much real estate. I got too many employees. I've got too much overhead. We got to start cutting back. That's all. Business is business. Nothing personal. Just business. This is a business transaction. So I'm going to show you some fundamentals of business. Here's what has to go. Now, some things you cannot save. Some things you can. What we can save, we save. What we can't save, we dump it out. When the second engine quits, that's even worse. More has to be jettisoned. But at some point in time, the objective is to get the airplane on two engines or one engine to the airport and landed safer. The objective is to save the airplane, not the cargo. Debt's a cargo. It goes. And there's a lot of toys, you know, like Marlboros. Hey, listen, the Marlboro cigarettes are real pleasurable, and God, we all love them. But if I have to choose between the Marlboros or swimming halfway across the Pacific to Honolulu, I think maybe we better dump the Marlboros, don't you? So there's some things that have to go overboard. That's the bottom line. It's called triage. Triage. And so we get right down to the nitty-gritty and say, okay, well, here's your position. Here's what you can save. Here's what you can't save. And every one of you can save yourself from this point on. I mean, if you're making $2 a day or more, right now, today, you can save yourself on $2 a day. If that's what it takes, we can do it. But, you know, you're not going to be able to smoke cigarettes, drink Jack Daniels, and visit Starbucks every day and fiddle on your fiddle, you know, while the ants are preparing, because you're running out of time. That's the bottom line. Now, the balance of payments deficit and these federal budget deficits are burying the great ship, America. And Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and John and Mike, they're not going to be able to save us out of the balance of payments deficits. It's a problem that's way, way past solving. That's a dead letter issue. And probably the mortgage on your house and selling your house and salvaging your equitable interest. Hell, I was watching the news last night. This lady bought a house for $500,000. It's worth $340,000. She's lost 160 grand. She's upside down. Walk away from it. That's the bottom line. So she made the right decision. She says, I'm going to walk away from it. It's a business decision. It's a logical thing to do. She made a bad decision when she bought it. And she made a bad decision when she signed up for that usury and interest. Boys and girls, there's bad decisions that we've made in life. Now it's time to jettison the bad decisions and start making some new decisions. Hell, as the old-timers used to say, do something, even if it's wrong. Do something. Because what you have been doing didn't work. And if what you've been doing didn't work, hasn't worked, isn't working, then it isn't very likely that doing what you've done in the past, which has been a total failure, is going to work in the future. So let's try something new. And my suggestion is let's try the 15 economic laws of the Bible. Let's try those 15 agricultural laws of the Bible, and let's combine those two, and let's see if we can bail our chestnuts out of the fire. Give us a call here at the Law School if you're interested in subsistence and survival or how to make $100,000 on 25 acres or less. And let's see if we can help you help yourself. Don't rely on FEMA. Don't rely on your government. They let you down in the past. And don't rely on George Gordon, because I'm sure to disappoint you if you do. Hey, I'm running out of time here, kids. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school offers a free four-hour introductory CD package. Be sure you order one by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Remember, it's free of charge. That's our four-hour free introductory CD package. That's 417-273-4967. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.